Standard Precaution Strategies. Standard Precautions, SP, strategies are a series of evidence-based procedures used for all patients in all settings, wherever healthcare is provided, to reduce the presence of microbiology agents in a healthcare facility and to prevent cross-contamination between HCP, patients, and the environment. Key point: application of SP is the first step in preventing the transmission of microorganisms between HCP, patients, and the environment. Every HCP must decide when and which SP are indicated. For SP to be effective, essential IPC components need to be present, including administrative support. Administrators ensure SP are incorporated into all aspects of patient care. They provide guidance, support, monitoring, and correction. Education. SP education at higher and annually is often a regulatory requirement. Policies and procedures. Policies and procedures must meet all regulatory requirements, be current, and be available to all HCP, plus access to reference materials. Institutional culture. In a culture in which patient and HCP safety is an expectation, adoption of safe work practices are integral and valued in IPC activities. SP include precautions for hand hygiene, HH, availability, selection, use, and disposal of PPE, donning and doffing of PPE. Patient placement, transfer, and discharge, respiratory hygiene and cough etiquette, use of patient care products and medical equipment, principles of safe injection practices, and compounding pharmacy. The extent that SP are required depends on the situation. For example, an HCP enters a patient's room with the goal of assisting them with daily hygiene and bathing. The HCP observes that the patient has vomited and is experiencing explosive diarrhea. The HCP sees that the patient, their bed linens, and the flooring are extensively soiled. Per SP guidelines, the HCP should perform HH and don a gown and gloves before assisting the patient. Key point: standard precautions should be used anytime healthcare services are rendered, even when it is not suspected that there is an infectious process present. Hand hygiene. According to current medical literature, most healthcare-associated pathogens are transmitted from patient to patient via the hands of HCP. Hand hygiene, HH, therefore, is the simplest and most effective method for decreasing the transmission of organisms between HCP, patients, and the environment and for reducing the incidence of HAIs more generally. Despite this well-established relationship between HH and infection rates, compliance with HH among all types of HCP remains inconsistent. Identifying effective methods to improve the practice of HH can enhance patient care and result in a significant decrease in the number of HAIs. As such, IPs should monitor HCP for HH compliance, and organizations should have detailed policies in place for when HCP should practice HH, for example, when entering and exiting patient rooms, as well as other protections, such as keeping gloved and ungloved hands from touching one's own mucous membranes. Good HH can break the cycle of transmission. As a part of SP, HH must be performed after touching blood, bodily fluids, secretions, or excretions, after touching contaminated items, immediately after removing gloves, between patient contacts. HH requires the use of either soap, plain or antimicrobial, or waterless alcohol-based hand rub, ABHR, products. ABHRs are the preferred method of HH, except when one's hands are visibly soiled, when preparing food, or when caring for patients with norovirus or C. difficile in an outbreak situation. While staff adherence to HH reduces the spread of infection among patients, HCP may experience skin irritation because of the frequency with which they perform HH. Good skin integrity constitutes an important barrier to infection. Soaps and detergents can damage the skin when used regularly. ABHRs are typically less irritating to the skin. Another potential barrier to HH compliance is the amount of time required to perform proper hand washing. Current guidance for standard hand washing recommends at least 15 to 30 seconds of vigorous friction with soap for it to constitute adequate HH. HCP may argue that the time constraints impede their ability to accomplish other patient care duties. In fact, lack of time is one of the most common reasons cited for hand washing failure. ABHRs require less time, and this is another advantage of promoting them over soap and water. Other strategies that may facilitate HH and minimize cross-contamination include having individual ABHR containers for each employee, strategically placed ABHR dispensers inside and outside of patient rooms, rewards for compliance with HH practices, and unit staff members appointed to act as role models and HH champions. There are two recognized guidelines for HH, the CDC's and the WHO's 5 moments. TJC requires facilities to acknowledge which of these guidelines they follow. The WHO's 5 moments. The WHO has developed an evidence-based, field-tested, and user-centered approach to HH, that is, when and how HCP should perform HH. The 5 moments for hand hygiene shown in Exhibit 3-15 identifies at what points during patient care HCP should perform HH. Exhibit 3-15. The WHO's 5 moments for hand hygiene. Hand hygiene compliance monitoring. Observing and monitoring HH is one of the most effective ways to assess HCP compliance with protocols and practices. The IP should be knowledgeable of the various approaches to HH observation and also familiar with the resources available to them to engage in the various strategies. There are a variety of performance indicators that may be used for HH compliance, including the performance of HH whenever indicated, HH technique, and the duration of HH. The IP should establish a baseline compliance rate, against which future observations will be compared, and then assess the local barriers to compliance. 3 surveillance approaches for assessing HH compliance are direct observation. Directly monitor a sample of HH opportunities and calculate the rate of adherence by dividing the number of HH episodes performed by the number of HH opportunities by ward or service. Product volume monitoring. Monitor the volume of specific HH products, example, soap, hand rub, hand lotion, used per 1,000 patient days. Automated monitoring. Employ a system of sensing devices to detect HH activity. A table comparing the pros and cons of these different approaches is shown in Exhibit 3-16. Exhibit 3-16. HH adherence monitoring methods. Checklists are simple and flexible tools that can be adapted for most situations. For example, the IP might create a simple checklist to evaluate the use of individual kinds of PPE, gloves, masks, respirators, etc. Or they might use a more general checklist that incorporates checks for all kinds of PPE used in the facility. Similarly, checklists may be designed to evaluate PPE use in specific wards or units within the facility, for example, a specific floor of patient rooms or PPE use among EVS staff. HH direct observation checklists would include the following actions: supplies necessary for adherence to HH, example, soap, water, paper towels, ABHR, are readily accessible to HCP in patient care areas. HH is performed correctly. Before contact with the patient. Before performing an aseptic task, example, inserting intravenous equipment or preparing an injection, administering eye drops. After contact with the patient. After contact with objects in the immediate vicinity of the patient. After contact with blood, bodily fluids, or contaminated surfaces. After removing gloves. When moving from a contaminated body site to a clean body site during patient care. Reporting the results of HH observation is an essential component of effective multimodal strategies to improve HH practices. Therefore, the IP must be prepared to report results and share feedback to relevant stakeholders, no matter which method of observation/evaluation was employed. Providing constructive feedback to HCP is a powerful promotional tool, one which can, depending on the performance measures employed during surveillance, for example, WHO's 5 moments, provide targeted and specific areas for improvement applicable to the healthcare facility's staff. Results gathered from observation can inform subsequent HCP education, either individually or collectively, based on identified gaps in compliance. The selection of the correct HH surveillance method depends very much on the facility's size, complexity, and available resources. Regardless of the method chosen, the IP must be prepared to provide timely feedback to improve compliance and performance. Availability, selection, use, and disposal of PPE. PPE is designed to protect the wearer's skin, eyes, mucous membranes, airways, and clothing from coming into contact with infectious agents. Healthcare facilities need policies and procedures for where PPE will be stored so that it is easily accessible by HCP but is not accessible by patients. Availability of PPE during emergency situations should not be taken for granted, as the COVID-19 pandemic made clear. Therefore, organizations need policies and procedures related to how much of each type of PPE to maintain in reserve. PPE is selected based on the tasks being performed and the anticipated level of exposure HCP expects to encounter. HCP's physical status should also be considered because mucous membranes and skin with compromised integrity are highly susceptible entry portals for infectious agents. Components of PPE can be used alone or in combination to give the desired level of protection. Fluid-resistant gowns. Worn when HCP anticipate performing patient care activities or procedures in which exposed skin or clothing are likely to be exposed to any patient blood, bodily fluids, secretions, or excretions. Gloves. Worn when HCP anticipate touching the mucous membranes or non-intact skin of a patient or any patient blood, bodily fluids, secretions, except sweat or excretions. Gloves should be worn when handling or touching contaminated equipment or environmental surfaces. HH should always be done immediately when gloves are removed. A single pair of gloves should never be used to provide care to multiple patients. Masks or masks with shields. Worn when HCP anticipates sprays of blood or bodily fluids, particularly respiratory secretions. HCP, patients, or visitors in healthcare settings also wear barrier masks to limit the spread of potentially infectious respiratory secretions. HCP should consider wearing barrier masks when providing direct patient care if at risk of spreading respiratory illness. Unprotected exposure before becoming symptomatic, example, influenza. Respirators. The most common particulate filtering facepiece is the N95 respirator. Its name is derived from the fact that it can filter 95% of airborne particles. These respirators are regulated by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, and the CDC, National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH. Based on OSHA standards, employees should have access to appropriate respirators and be provided with education for their use and also annual reevaluation of competency. The OSHA Respiratory Protection Standard contains the following requirements for respirator use: fit testing, proper record keeping, and employee training in seal checks. Powered air purifying respirators, PAPRs, air purifying respirators that use a blower to force air through filter cartridges or canisters and into the breathing zone of the wearer. PAPRs can take the form of tight-fitting facepieces or loose-fitting hoods/helmets. PAPRs provide a higher assigned protection factor than N95s and other respirators, and they can be used during healthcare procedures in which HCP are exposed to greater risks of aerosolized pathogens. PAPRs can also be used by HCP who cannot be fit tested with an N95 respirator. Surgical masks. Worn by HCP to protect the patient from infectious agents in the HCP's nose or mouth during sterile procedures such as insertion of catheters or during spinal procedures. Example, lumbar punctures, myelogram, and spinal anesthesia. Goggles/face shields. Worn by HCP to protect the eyes and face of the wearer from sprays of respiratory secretions, blood, or bodily fluids. Worn when HCP anticipate participating in a procedure that has the potential to generate splashes or sprays of blood or bodily fluids, secretions, or excretions. Personal eyeglasses or contact lenses are not acceptable eye protection. Face shields allow HCP to wear their own personal eyeglasses. Gowns. Worn by HCP to protect their arms and other exposed areas of the body. Also clothing from contamination by blood, bodily fluids, and other potentially infectious material. Gowns are mandated by the OSHA Bloodborne Pathogens Standard. For SP, gowns are used depending on the kind of patient interaction, based on the potential or anticipated exposure to blood or bodily fluids. Gowns are also used during contact precautions, in case of accidental/unintended contact with contaminated environmental surfaces. Gowns are always worn in conjunction with gloves and other PPE when indicated. Boots, shoe covers, and hair covers. These types of PPE are rarely used. However, they can be called for in the instance of a highly contagious pathogen, example, Ebola. Use and disposal policies and procedures include keeping hands away from the face and replacing PPE if damaged or heavily contaminated. PPE is considered contaminated upon leaving a patient's room and should be disposed of. The front of a mask or respirator is always considered contaminated and should not be touched. Patients should be positioned to direct splatters or sprays of patient blood, bodily fluids, secretions, or excretions away from the face of the HCP. Prior to providing patient care, HCP need to ensure that their PPE is positioned properly and secured to avoid potential repositioning contamination. Resuscitation/ventilation masks should always be used and made available and easily attainable in all areas where resuscitation may occur, even if infrequently needed. Donning and doffing of PPE. Evaluating PPE. The method for evaluating PPE depends on a number of factors, including the resources available to the IP, the size of the facility, and the method of monitoring that the facility employs. Ultimately, though, the IP is evaluating three key factors: availability and accessibility. Storage. Correct usage. If the IP is using electronic tools for tracking PPE supplies, then they should be able to generate and share spreadsheet reports and graphics that highlight PPE use more easily. However, direct observation of control measures is considered the gold standard of surveillance and evaluation, and the IP should, therefore, design an appropriate surveillance checklist for use in their facility. A checklist for monitoring PPE use should include the following elements that can be directly observed. Sufficient and appropriate PPE is available and readily accessible to HCP. PPE is used correctly. PPE, other than respirator, is removed and discarded prior to leaving the patient's room or care area. If a respirator is used, it is removed and discarded, or reprocessed if reusable, after leaving the patient room or care area and closing the door. HH is performed immediately after removal of PPE. Gloves. HCP wear gloves for potential contact with blood, bodily fluids, mucous membranes, non-intact skin, or contaminated equipment. HCP do not wear the same pair of gloves for the care of more than one patient. HCP do not wash gloves for the purpose of reuse. Gowns. HCP wear gowns to protect skin and clothing during procedures or activities where contact with blood or bodily fluids is anticipated. HCP do not wear the same gown for the care of more than one patient. Facial protection. HCP wear mouth, nose, and eye protection during procedures that are likely to generate splashes or sprays of blood or other bodily fluids. Exhibit 3-17 shows a checklist for doffing and donning of PPE. Exhibit 3-17, Donning and Doffing of PPE. Source, CDC, Sequence for Donning Personal Protective Equipment, PPE, and Sequence for Doffing Personal Protective Equipment, PPE, Patient Placement, Transfer, and Discharge. In the event that a patient is determined to be at increased risk for transmission of microorganisms, the patient should be placed in a single patient room if possible. Patients that are likely to contaminate the environment, do not maintain appropriate hygiene, or are at increased risk for acquiring infections or developing adverse outcomes following infection should be considered for single patient room placement. When a single patient room is not available, patient spacing should be maintained at a minimum of 3 feet or more. Privacy curtains may be pulled and used as an environmental barrier. When transferring a patient to an airborne isolation room, HCP must wear fitted N95 respirators. The transferred patient should also wear a mask while being transferred. Patients needing airborne isolation may need to be transferred to a different healthcare facility if the current facility does not have an airborne infection isolation room, a 2R. Upon patient discharge, terminal room cleaning should occur. At this time, all surfaces that came in contact with the patient or might have been contaminated during patient care must be cleaned and disinfected with a hospital-grade, regulatory body-approved combination cleaner/disinfectant. Unused paper products are considered contaminated and should be discarded. All clean and soiled linens are considered contaminated too, and must be sent to the laundry. Damaged pillows or mattresses must be replaced. EVS staff must use appropriate PPE, including a gown, when cleaning patient rooms. And all used PPE must be discarded upon exiting the room. Respiratory hygiene and cough etiquette. To limit the spread of infectious organisms from persons with potentially undiagnosed respiratory infections, respiratory hygiene and cough etiquette interventions should occur at the first point of entry into a healthcare facility. Signs and symptoms include coughing, congestion, rhinorrhea, or increased production of respiratory secretions. Elements of respiratory hygiene include education of HCP, patients, and visitors on the signs and symptoms of respiratory illnesses. Signage posted at entries in the languages of the local population. Easy access to source control measures, tissues, surgical masks, and HH supplies, including at entrances to and in waiting rooms. Encourage patients or visitors with respiratory symptoms to sit apart at least 3 feet from other people in the waiting room. Or better still, place them in a separate area when feasible. Patients exhibiting respiratory signs and symptoms will often be provided with a mask while they wait to receive care. Use of patient care products and medical equipment. The cleaning and disinfection of all surfaces, equipment, and devices in patient care areas is an integral part of SP. Cleaning all medical equipment and devices, including computers and technological devices, that enter patient care areas is important in preventing the transmission of infectious organisms. In short, it is essential that all equipment is cleaned according to manufacturer's IFU, including contact time. This ensures that equipment is not damaged due to the improper use of cleaning products or processes. Key point: equipment in healthcare settings is categorized according to the Spalding classification system, which separates equipment into critical, semi-critical, and non-critical items. Each category requires a different level of cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization. Details of this system and corresponding cleaning procedures are discussed in depth elsewhere in the learning system. That said, it is important to understand that no matter how equipment is categorized under the Spalding classification system, the necessary level of cleaning, disinfection, or sterilization is only achievable when the appropriate methods and cleaning and disinfecting agents are used according to manufacturer's IFU. Principles of safe injection practices. Safe injection practices are essential to ensuring both patient and HCP safety. There are 5 key principles to safe injection practices, and they are as follows. SP. All HCP who administer injections must perform HH prior to accessing medications, and also prior to administering an injection. Any required PPE should also be collected prior to using needles and other sharps. The HCP should also check expiration dates of all medications that are to be administered to ensure they are still viable. Ensure that all injection equipment and medication vials remain free from contamination. Needles and syringes. HCP should always follow the CDC's one and only rule and use a sterile, single-use disposable syringe and needle for each injection given. This is also the case when administering multiple injections to a single patient. A new, sterile needle and syringe must be used for each injection. Multi-dose vials and multi-use devices. To decrease the risk of the solution being contaminated from multiple accesses to the vial, single-dose vials are highly recommended over multi-dose vials, especially when administered to multiple patients. For some conditions, such as diabetes, patients will have their own multi-dose vials of medication, example, insulin, and multi-use devices, example, blood glucose monitors and insulin pens. These should not be shared between patients. Some medication, such as the influenza vaccine, will come in multi-dose vials, which can be used to administer injections to multiple people. Multi-dose vials to be used for more than one patient are kept in a central medication area and do not enter the immediate patient treatment area, example, operating room or patient room. Follow the one and only needle and syringe rule at all times. Medication vial access diaphragm should be disinfected before inserting a device to draw a dose. Medication preparation. Medication for a single patient should be drawn up and prepared just prior to administration. This should be done in a designated, clean preparation area. Medication should never be carried or stored in personal clothing or pockets. Sterile packaging should only be opened immediately prior to use, and the vial access diaphragm should be disinfected with an approved antiseptic immediately prior to accessing. Single-dose vials of medication may contain more than is needed for a dose. Excess medication should be disposed of per facility policy and manufacturer's instructions. Sharps disposal. All discarded sharps, Example, needles and scalpels, and items that could potentially become sharp should be considered and treated as potentially infectious waste due to their potential to cause cuts or puncture wounds. Therefore, sharps should be correctly and safely disposed of as soon as possible after use in FDA-approved, puncture-proof, and enclosed containers. Used needles should never be recapped, bent, or broken, and any safety device present should be engaged immediately after use. If recapping is necessary, only a one-handed technique should be used. All used sharps should be placed immediately in an approved puncture-resistant container that is designated for sharps disposal. Compounding pharmacies. Pharmacists and pharmacy technicians are primarily responsible for the preparation and storage of compounded sterile and non-sterile preparations. Compounding is the process of combining drug ingredients to prepare medications that are not commercially available, that is, neonate, pediatric, and geriatric dosage forms or manufacturer-related drug shortages, or to alter commercially available medications to meet patient needs, for example, Difree liquid. Pharmacy and IPC staff members must work together. In critical environments where sterile compounding is conducted, pharmacists should work closely with IPs to ensure that potential sources of environmental contamination are identified during routine environmental monitoring, that is, air surface and gloved fingertip sampling, and remediated as needed. Critical compounding environments must be cleaned and disinfected with appropriate equipment, for example, microfiber mops and low-linting wipes, and germicidal agents. Aseptic technique is vital since direct contact, that is, touch contamination, is the greatest contamination risk. The IP can provide subject matter expertise to the pharmacy director on SP, aseptic technique, maintaining a state of control in compounding environments, and gap analyses and risk assessments. The IP should be immediately consulted whenever a suspected or confirmed contamination event occurs. Collaboration between the IP, pharmacist, and administration includes coordinating with health department authorities and regional pharmacy boards to maximize patient safety. In order to meet this responsibility, IPs should be familiar with compounding pharmacy guidance. For example, the American Society of Health System Pharmacists, AHSP, guidelines on compounding sterile preparations. These guidelines are designed to help personnel who are involved in preparing compounded medications to ensure high quality and to limit the risk of harm to patients. These guidelines cover a variety of topics related to compounding facilities, including facility design and equipment handling procedures, the appropriate use and preparation of ampules and ingredients, quality assurance testing, and more. Key point: outbreaks in compounding pharmacies may arise from many reasons. A study by Nadine Shehab et al. Published by the Journal of Public Safety categorizes these reasons into three major areas. Personnel competency. Examples include a lack of qualifications and training or poor practices with regard to PPE and aseptic technique. Environmental quality and control. Examples include introduction of materials from uncontrolled environments into clean workspaces and reliance on substandard base ingredients. Quality assurance. Examples include release of product prior to sterility or potency assurance and storage practices unsupported by safety or efficacy data,